I think your recommendation for the cold open should be the cold open. I think my recommendation for your recommendation of the cold open should be the cold open. How's that sound?
I support your recommendation.
The narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host for the LBL All Souls podcast. I'm joined tonight by Red Powell.
Hello.
Tanya Gates.
Hi everybody.
And the precocious Adam Camilleri.
Oh hey. Play 40k every day.
What's up everybody?
It's good to be back. I missed you guys.
Oh, so glad to have you. Hey, and if you're new here, please like, share, subscribe. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star review. Really appreciate that. I'm going to try to mention it more often because those types of like zero cost things help other people find us with your engagement in that way. And it means a lot to us. Thank you very much for everyone who's done it so far. And really appreciate everybody tuning in week after week. We are a weekly show. So if you like what you hear, come on back next week. This last weekend, I participated in a 500-point combat patrol event at a buddy of mine's store in Nashville, Tennessee.
You looked so spiffy.
It's like first time out, right? You gotta do something.
You gotta make it an event. It's like a big deal.
It was nice to be out. Actually, I've got my second vaccination. Looking forward to it. I mean, look, it takes a little bit of the pressure off going out, and I'm certainly not encouraging anyone. And I'll quit saying that. I just want to make sure I'm not encouraging or putting pressure on anybody to get out, you know, follow all your guidelines and do what's right for you. But because the event was so small with just a few people and some great friends that I've not seen in over a year, I guess at this point, it was a nice excuse to get out.
So I want to know, did you win?
I ended up getting second place.
That's not too shabby.
It was a death guard on death guard mirror match, and then the score flipped, and I was winning until the very last turn, and it flipped on me with, dude, I mean, he was playing very well, but then he made like an 11-inch charge and popped off with a plague caster's mortal wound bubble like twice in a row, and like, oh my goodness, things have gone so poorly here in the last round. But it was a slugfest, and it was knocking the dust off. I mean, I had not played, you know, stakes other than pride and wanting to be better in quite some time.
And how did it feel to be back?
I did enjoy rolling dice. And so one of the cool things that he did, so Chris Pryor, he's in my gaming club, The Wrong Way Kids. He didn't charge an entry fee for this tournament. And he said that if you wish to kick in anything, then we're going to give it to a charity. And so over the course of that few hours of gaming between the people there, they raised almost $400 for All Aboard Animal Rescue, a no-kill animal shelter.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, it was very nice. I mean, look, stores, you know, sometimes they, you know, you pay an entry fee and, you know, they pay out in store credit, you know, as the prize. So they, you know, they make the, whatever that difference is kind of thing and stuff. But so it was really neat to see that and do that and then it go to a good cause and have people kick in, you know, out of the goodness of their heart, you know. So it's really neat to see, and then of course be playing there in a competitive setting.
I still stand by my statements that the wargaming community is one of the most generous communities that there are. Everybody just always gives, and it's so heartwarming.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
I really believe there's a lot of conversation that happens about, you know, is it better or worse that we're kind of unwieldy in how fast the game changes because it's, you know, accompanied by models and painting and all this hobby and stuff. And so, you know, we never move as quickly as, say, you know, some people might say it's Magic because all you have to do is print a card, or, you know, League of Legends or World of Warcraft, any of these things that are online. But because of the difference, we get to have a community. We get to have a real, living, breathing community that does awesome things.
Yeah, and it was seeing that. And then seeing the total just, you know, be what it was at the end of the day, you know, with, again, just only a few people that are giving out the goodness of their heart. It was really nice to see. And I took Typhus, which is kind of dastardly in a 500-point. But as you know, what I said was that was not the intention. The intention was to take a much more broken list that would have been against the rules. So I'm glad I didn't. But it just worked out where I took Typhus, a handful of Poxwalkers, a unit of Walking Plague Marines, and 5 Chaos Spawn. And the Chaos Spawn actually performed like a champ there. I faced a couple of Marine players, and Chaos Spawn gets some work done against Marines.
So how'd you go?
Second place is what I finished up in. And there was just a time when Typhus just tanked a primary Space Marine captain with the shield that 4+ saves of mortal wounds and a unit of aggressors. They just all came over there and tried to pummel Typhus. Typhus is like, you know what? Not today.
You know, back to the spawns, I think that they're like a bit underrated because they're like pretty inexpensive. And I think because of that, and also because you can run them singularly or in units, they make really great like screening and like zoning units. But also in some matchups, they can come in and just like blend, like they would come in and just blend guardsmen, right?
Those 2d3 attacks. I mean, I was often, even with just a couple of them left, I'm often rolling 17 attacks or something.
Gross. Yeah, they're really good.
Yeah, I think they only got better with the change in kind of defensive metrics we're looking at. Whereas, you know, we're no longer thinking about how good is XYZ into a Marine body. We're trying to actually factor in how good they are into a witch or an incubi as well now. So I think they hold up even better under those ideas.
I did enjoy running them. There was the only time they really got my legs taken out from under me with them is, you know, when you'd fail a charge. They're not exactly defensive, although I did take the grandfatherly influence on them to make them a little bit beefier, but without an armor save, without an invulnerable save. Without an armor save to speak of, really, and then without an invulnerable save, they still, you know, if they're hanging out there in the wind, they're a little fragile, but they're not a lot. They're not a ton of points. And so I think it's worth it.
I'm just kind of amazed that it's like your first event back in however long and you didn't take Blood Angels. Like, has that ever happened in an edition? Has it ever happened in an edition, Paul?
I don't think so. No, I wanted to paint some things and get some things ready. And, I told you I painted the Solace for my buddy. And then I was like, you know, wouldn't it be cool to take something a little bit different? I I've been running Sanguine Guard for a year plus, and I just wanted to do something a little bit different.
Well, I do think this has to fulfill some kind of prophecy, doesn't it? Like, there has to be some kind of prophecy laid down in times of yore stating, you know, on the 21st year of the second millennium, the TPM shall not run Blood Angels or some.
The BA.
I love that I said the TPM, like it's the Paul Murphy. Never mind.
Oh my god! I will take BA the next time. I promise.
Don't. see how deep this rabbit hole goes.
I'll just wait till I get all these Blight Lords finished. I do think so. The Dark Eldar Drukhari Menace is out there right now.
Yeah, a lot is being made of them. I haven't beaten them yet. I'm 0-6.
I just don't think people are taking the right stuff.
That's fair.
I don't know what the right stuff is, other than Blight Lord Terminators.
I haven't gotten to fight them yet, so they are officially like the big bad boogeyman, and I'm just sitting here going like, I wonder if my army could handle it, maybe?
So what do y'all think the falling down is? Because any time that we see an army that's being dominant, and sometimes it's the freshest army that's come out, and that could be the case now. We know we don't have as many sample games as we would like to see, but the win percentage as we know it is in like the 75-80% range, which is pretty high.
Yeah, it's very high. And for those, this is stuff, something we could go into for ages. I'm sure Red could speak to it as well as any of us. But the statistics around where we want armies to be strength-wise, like supposedly in a balanced, perfect world, every army would have something between a 45 and a 55% win rate. Mm-hmm. You know, the better armies a bit higher, worse armies a little bit less, but everyone's kind of around that. It's probably unrealistic for how many factions we have in this game and how, you know, it's fueled and the game moves and ebbs and flows. It's probably more realistic to go 45 to 65 or 40 to 60 than it is to go, you know, 65 to 55. That's just too small a gradient, I think, for our game and how many units and et cetera, et cetera. But these guys are sitting at 70 plus, according to the people who look into these kind of things and go through these metrics and gather all the juicy data. But yeah, what do you guys think of that? Does that blow your socks off?
It does seem a little lopsided right now, but I legitimately think that they are being disruptive to the field right now because everyone's still trying to play castled up Marines, regular old Space Marines.
It's true. Yeah, I think they come with a unique problem set though. So it's for the first time in 9th edition, we have an army that needs to be demeched. I suppose the only other army that really required demeching, as in I'm using air quotes here, was Harlequins.
Getting people busted out of their transports.
Yeah. And so these guys are a can of sardines. They've got all these crazy explosive units that are very well costed or possibly under-costed, packed into these little tin cans. And everyone has stopped taking the stuff that cracks tin cans and, you know, so very efficiently, apart from, you know, say sisters with retributors.
Yeah, the random meltas that people sprinkle in.
Yeah. Remember the odd, the tax squad we'd have that have a melter gun and a las cannon. That's actually more what we need than we need five inceptors with a thunder hammer, which is what everyone was using, say, last edition.
Well, I think, you know, they've got still the invulnerable save on these vehicles.
Yes, they do. They'll come with a standing six up. They can all be minus one to hit unless they are covens. And they all come with a six up or a five up, depending on what turn it is. Yeah.
So if you just have a casual amount of melted guns or things that demech, using your word here, you could be blanked because of just any type of streaky rolling.
Yeah, and they come at you in waves. Like you might think, because I've played against them and turn one killed three or four boats and been like, ha ha, job done. And it's just another wave of stuff. And there's more and more and more and more waves. I don't know. And here's something that I wish had happened. And it's funny that this is my scenario in my head, seeing as how the release schedule for GW has been. I wish we got a month or two's break between the Drakari Codex and the Book of Rust. Because right now, I can't tell whether it's the Cult of Strife supplement that is causing these guys to be over the top, or if it's inherently what they got in their codex. Mm-hmm. I've got a feeling it's the Book of Rust stuff. I've got the feeling that the Cult of Strife meant that witches were already really good, already exceptionally good, and then they went over the top by being able to ignore Overwatch, which was very dangerous. If you can Overwatch, you know, a couple of Hurricane Bolters into 10 witches is decimating. Fighting twice and all the other crazy stuff they got in there as well. I feel like that is what put them over the top in my mind, but I can't say for sure because they came out pretty much back to back.
That's a fair criticism, I guess. But I mean, do you think that's just a case of adjustment on our side? Like, could conceivably ball predators come back into the meta because of?
Oh man, I would. Do you know what you know? I would love ball predators to have a day in the sun.
This is not my idea. Another buddy of mine suggests, he's like, "Do you think ball predators?" I said, "Don't do that to me."
Don't give me hope.
Please do not do that to me, because I don't think that, like, you could gear up with ball predators and then never face Drakari.
Yeah, that's true.
But I do think it's a case of that people need to shift their war gear around, to your point that you were making a minute ago.
Yeah, look, I'm of the opinion that I'll come out and say I'm not agreeing with what Paul's going for, and that we need meta adjustments in order to handle them. I think there are a couple of things that Drakari have that shouldn't be. I think the first one being the 40 attack succubus. I think everyone's in agreement that should not be a thing. And for those of you who don't know, that's the combination of razor flails on a succubus that has competitive edge. And so she has reverse exploding attacks. So, you know, most of the time you'll have a mechanic that gives you exploding attacks on your hit or to wound roll, and she has the inverse of that. Every attack that she has at the start of her profile, it doesn't make it and deal damage to the opponent, she gets an extra attack for. And because she has razor flails, each one of those extra attacks becomes two attacks, and she already doubles her attacks. So I think that is something that's erroneous and should not be. But apart from that...
A little, I don't know, selective rules reading, but
yeah exactly right. 100%. That just needs a clarification, being like, no, not as intended, stop it, yeah. You naughty, naughty boys and girls. But yeah, apart from that, there are a couple of things. I think that's just some basic point adjustments would make a world of difference. But at the same time, I'm not a huge fan of just using points to balance a game, because mm-hmm. we saw what that did to an army like GSC. GSC went from an army that was extremely potent, extremely powerful, and, you know, leveraged around making cheap-ish units, say like Aberrants or Acolytes with swords, really, really explosive and powerful through clever use of synergy and things like that. But then their points went up on all those things, and it's like, oh, this thing is nearly dead. We've you know, killed this horse.
Don't get me wrong. I love war games, and I love mechanics behind them. All that shouldn't be a surprise, I guess. However, I guess I'm kind of a somewhat of a adapt or die kind of mentality.
he also plays Drakari, so, you know, take that for...
No, I mean, I haven't played them since...
I'm kidding, right? You know I'm not.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, there have always this, whether you want to call it power creep, codex creep, whatever. When has that not existed? When is, for real?
Yeah.
When have we not had that, right? I don't mind the updates to the game being that it kind of comes out in codexes. I think that, Adam, you're right on when it comes to the fact that the Book of Rust probably added something a little faster than maybe anticipated, because I think hands down that the Cult of Strife things that were added in were they don't come with a disadvantage. As we said when we walked through it, the Death Guard, you had to build essentially an army of renown to really get a lot of access to their stuff. There is no Army of Renown requirement for the Cult of Strife material that's in the Book of Rust. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. But at the same time, what happened when Space Marines came out and then the Iron Hands supplement came out? I mean, like, there was a little bit of an FAQ that came out behind it to balance things out. Maybe some of the things that, you know, as indicated, the exploding attacks on failures, succubus, like, maybe that's not necessarily as intended to one extent or another, and they're going to change it. I don't mind that either. I think that was appropriate, especially looking back at the Iron Hands and what they did to that. I don't have an issue with the fact that they added in balances. I think to a certain extent, I'm always interested in what crowds of people are complaining about what at what given time, because, you know, just like the case pointed out, like me playing Drukhari on the off-sided deal. I mean, it's someone asked me what armies I play, and I started off with Khorne, and I was like, you know, but I really like my Necrons. And I was like, oh, but I have all these Drukhari that I haven't unpacked in a while, and I can't wait to get back to El Paso to play. Like, I'm going to have fun when I finish my move and I can dig all my stuff out. But, you know, the Codex creep's a real thing. And to be fair, in certain regards, you know, as we continue to progress in certain realms of, you know, of reality as it is, we continue, technology advances and the character of war continues to change and adapt, and we have to adapt and change with it. The fundamentals, the nature of war, remains the same. And so you stick to it. War is eternal. Yeah. Welcome to the grimdark, where the fundamentals remain the same, but your how you perceive the characters of war and how you act within it, like, that's on you. I think, Paul, you brought up a good point with the adjustment to the meta. You know, do players need to adapt? Yeah, players need to adapt, just like they had to adapt to Iron Hands or to any of the stuff that's come out to one extent. I mean, look at how the meta adapted to, you know, we talk about bringing the right weapons and everything to defeat the Space Marines and you know, Eradicators and Attack Bikes and Deathwing Terminators, and everything came out, and then Death Guard hit, and look at, you know, Sisters. I know that there's not a lot of maybe hype or attention about it, but Sisters were doing really well, and still probably are to a certain extent. You know what Sisters can bring? They can bring a ton of heavy bolters. And you know what will tear into Dark Eldar pretty well? Heavy bolters.
That was actually part of the discussion, is like the Ball Predator has you can put the assault cannons on top if you wanted to, and it has heavy bolt response. And
exactly.
Please do not, nobody go out and rush out. I mean, unless you just want to, but they, that is an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah. Well, and look at it, like, what heavy bolters, we were talking about that for a while. Heavy bolters were a great idea. However, then another army came out with Disgustingly Resilient, which reduces all damage by one. And everybody's like, oh no, I'm not going to take any more heavy bolters anymore. Well, the heavy bolters are actually a really good response to Drukhari. And everybody's like, well, but there's death. Well, I'm sorry, you got to make a choice. It's a dilemma.
I have it all.
You got to commit to something. When unfortunately balance might actually look like having to make a tough decision between what you have available, and you might not just have the catch-all answer for everything. You might have an unfortunate matchup, and I think that might be something in the direction they're going with balance. And some of that's going to be player maintained. I'm okay with it. I'm glad to see some of the stuff in it. Glad to see change and constant tweaking, retooling to what we all love and play. I mean, where were Drukhari before the Codex came out?
Never heard of them.
No, I mean, Blood of the Phoenix was mildly interesting, right? Mildly interesting. And it was the first Psychic Awakening, and it didn't get all the other things that a lot of the other Psychic Awakenings got to a certain extent. And I guess I just don't feel bad. Like, it's cool. Like, let it play out. It'll, trust me, the next Codex, just wait till AdMech comes. And then wait till what's after that, and wait till what's after that.
Well, I do think that there's maybe some clarification needed on some rules interactions. But far as like how fast and deadly the army is and what the army does, I mean, that change to transports is, I mean, you pointed this out, Reddit, when we're doing our review form, as a game changer.
Yep.
And turns out it was really a game changer. I mean, I don't know how to describe it other than that.
No, it's awesome. I mean, it is great. Is it overpowered? I think that the as you said, I have nothing wrong with tweaking with nerfs and everything, like quote unquote nerfs, right? There were a lot of people that were really unhappy when the Iron Hands FAQ came out, and I guess I didn't feel bad for him either. And so when it comes out,
it was pretty brutal.
Was it a balancing effect? To an extent, it was. I mean, suddenly there weren't as many people rushing to buy Iron Hands and play them as much because, no, it just wasn't as good. There are some optimal choices to be made in list design, but at the same time, I'm okay with it. So it'll be cool. I think it's going to be great. I think that GW is going to continue to deliver on a game that and not saying that anybody was downing it, but I do see a lot of, I guess the sky is falling to a certain extent.
But does every army have what could be a conceivable answer or counter to this new menace?
So I'm of the opinion right now, no. Sure. In fact, I think there's only a handful of armies that have legitimately very good answers. Funnily enough, one of the ones that I think is the best is Grey Knights, which doesn't get talked about all that much. It's just because you think about all the offensive profiles Grey Knights have, and every single one of them just like takes a whole pound of flesh off a Drakari army. It's actually kind of sick.
You're talking between the smites and like Gatling Psi Cannons and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, Psi Cannons, silencers, all the pluses to wound, pluses to damage that they get on those weapons in the tides and the...
Silencer is what I meant to say. That's
yeah.
Yeah.
All of them, even Storm Bolters, like absolutely smash into Drakari. I just like they would be my best counter if they had their second wound, which we know is coming at some point down the track eventually one day. But yeah, if they only had one more wound, because the issue is like you get to alpha them, then they get to alpha you back. Or
you're paying 17 points for half as many wounds as the next Marine.
Yeah, next Marine equivalent. As soon as they get their second wound, they're going to be so plumb to do an amazing amount of work. That's if, you know, their codex keeps everything the same, which it won't. So
I think forget everything I Dread Knights are still, I mean, they're still pretty good today.
I actually really like one Dread Knight. I think one Dread Knight is primo secretly very good.
Thought about taking one to that 500 point tournament.
Right. Sisters is my other top pick for a really good counterplay into them. Because Sisters can play the same game. Yeah, Sisters, you know, everyone was saying, oh, wow, Sisters just trade up. They can have small MSU units, pump as many synergies or CPs as you want, and you'll get it to trade up. And so that's essentially what Drakari are doing as well. Drakari, you know, are built to trade up. Sisters can do the same thing. At a similar level of MSU as well. You can make them mech'd up if you like, or just take everything walking around, maybe
and
a brigade.
And get invul saves.
Exactly right. It's a like-for-like matchup, but then you can level the playing field and get back to play a strength somewhat, which I think is a really big thing to do when we have these obvious outlier, this is the best army right now, factions, level the playing field and get it back to player skill. And so the other one is, of course, AdMech is very good because they can do a very similar thing. You think about the dogs, you know, the Sulphur Hounds, the Cerberus Raiders. Firstly, the Cerberus Raiders is a massive headache for Drakari to try and close with you. The guns that they're bringing right now do not clear 15 Cerberus Raiders very quickly. They bring a lot of Dark Lances, some Phantasm Grenade Launchers. Cerberus Raiders are in a very good position to stay a nuisance for most of the game. And then on top of that, there's a lot of squishy characters that Cerberus Raiders can snipe out with their little rifles. And then the Sulphur Hounds and the Taraxi and the Infiltrators and all those weapons, all those guns that they have, it's just same thing as the as what I said about the Grey Knights. You can take the right profiles to do a hellacious amount of damage.
So with Sisters being as prevalent as they were a few months ago, where did they all go? Did those players become Drakari players?
For sure some did. For sure some like, okay, so this is just the better version of Sisters now. I should probably just play this if I'm thinking I want to, you know, play the cutting edge, this style of army. And you know, no, I can't say a bad word about that if that's how you enjoy
playing
the game.
No. But I see this, I guess this is all pointing to what I really believe that this is a temporary problem. And if we go too hard towards finding a solution that is not just adjusting what makes it to our tabletops, then we run the risk of overcorrecting.
Well, exactly right. And only GW knows. For all we know, this was supposed to come out in conjunction with AdMech and Orcs, which were both very good foils to this. And they were like going to all rock, paper, scissors each other or be competitive into each other. And then that would cause a rebalance in and of itself. And, you know, we'd be in a much better picture. So honestly, like only GW knows. And we'll pretty much when they bring out their FAQ, we'll know for sure what their plan was. If they bring out the FAQ and it doesn't have wholesale changes, then we're like, okay, this is all part of the plan. Everyone's strapping. It's all going to be okay.
I just don't think we need more horsehole changes. I think we need more heavy bolters in people's lists.
I think that's a fair point. I think, you know, I think to a certain extent, they gotta, you know, they gotta watch how they go into certain things. But at the same time, I mean, really, like there is a point where, I mean, Adam, our guard armies might very well have just as much a place as anything else, you know?
Yeah,
heavy bolters.
Well, the guard have got two really, really, really cool profiles, and also, so I was going to say, on top of the heavy bolters, we got Wivens. I'd love to see Wivens and mortars.
That's right.
Come back into vogue a little bit because they're both actually quite good.
They're pretty cheap too. I think.
Yeah,
I mean, mortars are especially cheap, but I think Wivens for what they do are not really expensive.
And you know, as soon as you demech one of these things, or even if you don't, and you just like using all those mortar shots with rolls to wound, most of the boats that they have only have a 4+ armor. You're still going to get a couple of wounds through here and there. It's not a terrible use of the tool. But past that, we got the ability to take essentially the shooting version of these witch units. The witch units, you know, just having some little pistols go in and just shred and trade up things like scions, things like veterans, things like special weapon squads coming in from reserve, especially, or popping out of transports. They can all do the equivalent of trading up by, you know, taking melter guns, taking plasma guns, and demeching these things for you.
I like this concept of like they trying to figure out how to get their little squishy bodies on the ground.
Yeah, because that's exactly what you got to do. You got to get them on the ground on your terms, not when they want to get them out, when you want to get them out.
So what is the priority? So the priority first is to deal with the witches. You know, if there's big units of witches, and then the vehicles first, witches second.
I think that you have to deal with the vehicles first, personally. And maybe not even like the first, because I mean, ideally, I would think that the Drukhari are going to come in at you in waves still. So probably get the vehicles that might be coming in on the second wave and just like pin as many bodies down in their deployment zone as possible, so that the foot slog up the board. That would be my priority. But like as a new player, I'm not sure if that's the correct thing to do.
Sounds solid. Yeah, I don't know what the right answer is. I'm throwing it out there. It's complete hypothetical.
You know, Adam, to your point, I think it kind of depends on who you're playing to a certain extent, right? And some of that's difficult if these are not people you play, because as I've said before, right, there's things that you need to understand about the battlefield. There's the terrain, of course. There's your army, knowing your army in and out, where your strengths and weaknesses are. Knowing your opponent's army, because there's a whole other rule set to that, right? And then also knowing your opponent. And so some of that's going to be different depending on who's doing what. And sometimes it's hard to predict. And so I know that sounds kind of esoteric, I guess, but the
commit.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the thing, though, is that it's all circumstantial, right? It's all about the context. I agree, Tanya, when it comes down to it, you look at it like that, your approach makes sense. Stop what's delivering them, right? Especially because a lot of the times, especially if they have a Blackheart Cabal or something like that, and really the Strife Raiders, you talk about their ability to get into the fight and everything, like they're going to use those vehicles to help lock you down. Adam, you mentioned waves and things like that. Mm. Like, you know, we joked about Venoms getting in close combat and things. That's totally a tactic right now, using those vehicles to just further lock down units and just hold the battlefield while the Drukhari essentially control everything else and get into the fight. They totally want to fight on their terms. Like it was said, you know, try and get them to fight on your terms, try and figure out how to do that. And so sometimes they've got mandrakes, they've got these fast moving vehicles that can push across the entire field and still charge in some cases. You know, you've got a lot to be concerned about to such an extent. So how are you phasing the fight to control it at your tempo and not the other opponent's tempo, at the Drukhari's tempo? Because there's this it's like a sound wave, right? Like they move so far and so fast, their maneuver capability, your decision capability and what you've got, because you move so much slower in a lot of cases for other armies, you know, you've got to maximize what you can do with your range and how far you can influence them. The whole sound wave thing, because you can't move as fast, you can't act as fast, you've got a slower sound wave, right? They've got a faster sound wave, their amplitude's got a higher frequency where they can make more decisions and accomplish more in one turn just because they move so far. So how are you slowing that down? How are you making them work towards your pace? And so what are you bringing in your army to do that? And that goes back to Paul's point. Did you bring something to actually be able to influence them? You know, did you bring heavy bolters? Did you bring wyvern? You know, did you bring whatever in order to do that? So you got to have the stuff to destroy their vehicles. You got to have the stuff to take out the mass to that extent. And really, when you look at it, like until they get into combat, most of their stuff, most of their armor saves are at fives, or invuln saves are at fives. whatever, like you can cut into them. You can deal damage to them at range. That doesn't say that they can't do the same, but they're going to, they want you to essentially, it's tough because there's a lot of things going for them as far as that speed and range they have, but you've just got to figure out how you're going to attack it, what they put on the table, because now players, all players have that ability with strategic reserves to essentially, oh, well, I'm just not going to give you these hellions, right? Which are kind of, they can definitely get taken down a notch just by volume. But so they're going to try and do that to you because from wherever they're coming from, they can definitely reach you. And so it's definitely a dilemma.
To Adam's point, choice. I think that you do have to have a basically flawless first turn.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that goes back to my point on the amplitude. If you make a mistake because of how much they can do in a given turn, they're definitely going to take advantage of it. And so you've got to be as careful as possible to certain degrees up front.
So one thing that, this is something that I suppose we talked about the fight game and combat sports and whatnot, there's a lot of talk about weaponizing distance, weaponizing the range at which the fight is conducted, or in this case, you know, the tabletop war game. But I feel like Drakari more than anybody else weaponizes distance because they've got a bigger reach. Their combat reach is bigger than across the board is bigger than anybody else's. I had a game, yeah, where I had three Talon Masters, and I was like, oh yeah, I've got two assault cannons on each of these Talon Masters. I'm going to use them. And I put the three Talon Masters 24 inches away from his front line, shot the Talon Masters, did a bunch of damage, yeah, and then got charged by six units. Oof. From 24 inches away. There was nothing in my army closer than 24 inches, and I got charged six times. And I was just like, huh. So I'm playing a game that has to be played at the, you know, outside 24 inches, obviously, because this doesn't work. And I just haven't come to a solution from that point. I'm stuck on that part of the conundrum.
Let me help you out. Heavy bolters are 36 inch range.
No, I mean, for real, right? Yeah. Like, and that's an excellent point, Adam, in regards of understanding. We can all sit here and measure out. We kind of get used to certain distances and everything. But like, this has been the thing. Like, think about Inari, right? When Inari came into play, like, what made them so good was this ability, and Harlequins still have it too. And now we've got Drukhari in it. This ability to move across the table and do things. Like, it really is. Like, I know that sounds kind of pedantic, but like, they really can. They really can make the distance. And if they get there, I think that the melee, the fight phase is one of Drukhari, especially given Witch Cults and as was mentioned, their strengths. There's a lot to it, and they can do a lot with the fight phase specifically that can really frustrate armies. You know, to a certain extent, people look at it and they're like, yeah, you know, they're not that strong. They're not that bad. But no, they've got just enough. They've got just enough that it definitely sinks it in. And that ability to get across the table and do something is huge. And it's really going to take people a minute, I think, to just acknowledge it, accept it, and run with it to certain extents. Because to be fair, we've kind of all adapted to Space Marines and Necrons to a certain extent, given, you know, starting right out of ninth. Like, everyone kind of gets the whole Space Marine range, like Inceptors and moving, you know, 12 or 14 inches and then shooting at 18 inches. Like, we're all on board with that. However, now you've got this other army that really, it's their range wasn't out of question before. They just have a little bit, they have more of a kick to when they get into combat. And so it is, they are definitely improved from what they were before. But I don't think that what fundamentally makes that army has changed outside of that.
So as to your question before, how to handle them. Every time I pop a boat, I want to be able to interact with its contents. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I don't want to just demech, because demeching isn't enough, because they still get the 3-inch move out of that, and then they'll still get to sling from there. Every time I make boots hit the ground, I want to be in a position to interact with the unit that got out. And so that means a couple of different things. That means I have to make a value assessment on whether I need to target the three units are usually inside these things. It would be Cabalites, Rax, Incubi, Witches. Sorry, that's four things. I'm bad. But
a lot of stuff, man.
Those are the things. And you've got to make a value assessment on which one of those is going to kick your worst. If they got Blood Brides, that's usually as a Marine player, Bloodbraths and Incubi are usually my 1 and 2 or 2 and 1, depending on what my configuration is. And so those are the boots I want to get on the ground first. If I get Bloodbraths boots on the ground, they've got a 6+ invulnerable save. Any guy with some bolters is just going to pick them up. A unit of 3 bikes with a flamer or 2 that scoots up to next to that boat, 6 inches away, of course, so you can't be blown up in the explosion. But then you pop that bike, 3 bikes with 2 flamers, does a great job of killing, you know, the majority of 10, if not all 10 of those ladies that get out. Same thing for what I was saying about the Wyvern, you know, a unit of plasma science come down, pop the boat, Wyvern smashes the contents. The same thing can't be said for Incubi. If Incubi get out in cover, they've got a 2+ armor save. So you actually need to have a decent plan for how to take care of those guys. Naturally, they can't sling at you as quickly as witches can. But the thing is that especially if you're playing Marines, they'll kill anything they kind of want.
That's a tough nut to crack. I mean, I think that might be the unit you leave on the ground to the next turn.
Yeah, exactly right. And if you're only equipped to deal with witches, well, you got an easy decision, because you guess what, you're going to go after the witches. If you're only equipped to deal with the Incubi because you've got a bunch of plasma guns that aren't great into like just a T3 witch body, guess you're going after the Incubi. And so you can really hone it down from there. But if you're looking at list construction,
a casual point there, but that's actually a pretty big thing, is make sure that you're not wasting a turn by firing at the wrong thing that you don't successfully interact with.
Exactly.
I mean, how often does that happen against sisters players, right? Like how often, because you think about it, they're kind of go-to deal with their rhinos and Repentia, and you know, you got to be able to crack those vehicles and then also be able to kill it's the same principle, right?
Yeah, exactly right. It's no good. So and that's, I guess, where the coming at waves thing happens. Like for every boat that remains intact, they retain a multitude of opportunities in the game, like inside the game state, inside the mission state, wherever that may be. And so it's not enough for me to just be able to crack the boats. I need to be able to deal with whatever comes out. And that's where I'm stumped. I'm like, wow. So I need to play Super Ultra MSU, but every army that I have that plays Super Ultra MSU doesn't do it as good as them. So that just means either I need to get better at players, or there's a tool set I haven't uncovered yet, or there's a player out there I haven't talked to yet who's got an idea. And that's where I love our community, because there will be some guy somewhere who's just like, what you all worried about? I got this sorted.
Well, at least it's another opportunity to go and review the codex. Maybe something in there that you weren't considering before, because it, you know, whatever your army book is, because it didn't fit the current need, and now there's a new threat, a new combatant has entered the arena.
Yeah, my current never, like what I'm assuming is going to be my soon to never leave home without is a Judicia with a 6-inch Croak Intervention. I think that guy just went up in his stock, is on a meteoric rise as of right now.
Nice. Well, this has been a great conversation. I appreciate y'all entertaining it. Let's take a break if we can, and then we'll come back with some more stuff.
Cool.
See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey, everybody. We are back. Still got everybody here. Thanks for coming back with us. So, you know, Combat Patrol did that event this past weekend. And of course, you know, we can't be playing an event without some of us sitting around and talking about like the event itself, the theory, the events and whatever. And we were discussing like, could Combat Patrol be like a real thing, considering you need conceivably have smaller play space, more room, you know, space in between tables, between so people could be a lot more socially distant if you're playing on the, you know, the 2000 point table space. And how do you make it kind of competitive? And then we started thinking about like, what if you ran it similar to like a Warhammer Underworlds, where you did like a best of 3 within this span of 3.5 hours or something like that?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of legs to this, but I'm not crazy familiar with the differences between Combat Patrol. It's just a smaller version of the game. You start with less CP. Yeah, are there any
and three whole like things, CP? Three CP.
Yeah, but so we need to clarify Kill Team and Combat Patrol. Completely different things.
Not right? Yet. Yeah. Yes. The Kill Team has its own rules, its own set of rules, own set of stratagems, own, you know, I think there's some differences in stats, but maybe I haven't been through everything in a while, but it's a distinct different thing. Combat Patrol is, I think you start with a patrol detachment and basically 3 CP for the power level of the, you know, for the points level of the game. And you play on a much smaller surface, like a table.
I mean, so you still play in it's a half of a normal table, right? It's 30 by 44.
Yeah.
And so you play 500 points and 1,000 points on this. I will say encounter this pretty regularly given Crusade, because Crusade plays 500 and 1,000 points starting off a lot. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I'm with you, Paul. I think that 1,000 points, 500 points, it's when we talk about space in the battlefield, 500 points across 30 by 44 field is actually pretty small. It's interesting, to say the least. And it really makes, so the difference, you know, Adam, you want to talk about between kill team and combat patrol. Combat patrol is Warhammer 40K. It's just at 500 mm-hmm. points. Kill team, you're controlling individual models at a much more finer degree.
There's interaction and stuff, activation, right. and kill team. It's not, I don't want to say it's not 40K. I still get that same 40K visceral feel to it, but it is a distinctly different game.
Absolutely. I have a question, though. What makes you think that 500 points cannot be competitive?
I think that we somehow are, we've equated in our minds anything less than 2,000 points or 1,850 or whatever the commonly accepted standard point level, you know, isn't the way to play.
Well, I'm going to be perhaps a bit controversial here, but I think smaller point games are more competitive and more interesting. And it's just because you can't bring all of your goodies. You can't bring all your toys. You have to really think about the synergies in your list quite heavily. And you talk about trading, like trading up. Like, those trades have to be really well thought out, because when you lose your units, you really, really feel them. You don't have a lot of redundancy built into these small lists. And I feel like at the smaller points games, it's more tactical on the table, whereas maybe in the larger point games, it's more tactical in army list building.
So you're thinking like your resource management have even more dire consequences if you screw it up.
Correct. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I like it better, personally.
No, I dig that. But again, with us playing, and these were some serious, I mean, these are people I'd consider some serious tournament players. Of course, some people were there for fun, but it was more the exercise of getting out and doing something. But do you think like this has any kind of legs at all, like a best of three in this? Because ideally you can play a lower point game in a shorter amount of time. But let's just say you had all the time that you would normally have in a normal weekend, but you wanted to have extra space and maybe fewer models, less interactions with models and that kind of stuff. Is it reasonable? Could that catch on?
I like the idea of a best of three against like the same opponent, because I think you really get a test of skill and less like a test of dice rolls, right? So like if you get around in one game where the dice just like really didn't go your way, well, maybe in the next round that might balance itself out, or you just might get a better sense of who in this matchup is the best general.
Yeah, I dig it. A little bit less gotcha hammer too, with maybe a stratagem you weren't familiar with. You know, they bust it out, or I don't know. I think that you start seeing some games within games.
You know, I like it.
And it just, again, it's, I have no plans to run anything like this yet, but it just got us thinking, and to me it sounded kind of fun.
How did you like the missions?
Oh, they were fun. I think what I found a little difficult was the picking secondaries in when you only had 3-4 units on the table was a little more difficult.
Laughs in Imperial Guard. 3 or 4 units.
God, what'd I have? Typhus, Poxwalkers, who struggle with performing actions because they can't unless it spread the sickness. Chaos Spawn, which you probably also don't want performing administrative activities. One unit of Plague Marine. So I basically ended up having one unit that could function as my action, you know, doer, but I needed them to also contribute to the battle. It was an interesting, the constraints were different, and I felt it. I found it challenging and fun to navigate.
And, you know, like last week, we talked about different comps and everything, and I think that this is a good thing to explore. I'm not disagreeing that there isn't, I would argue, somewhat of a different competitive framework, because there, as you mentioned, Tanya, you know, there's only so many things you can explore with 500 points. And by that, there's only so many things you can exploit, right? There is something to this as you start to build all these different units together, the synergy of different units and auras and how it affects it starts to really run away with itself to certain degrees. What I would argue to some extent is that it also, you really don't get to see at 500 points maybe some of the broader aspects of the armies. I mentioned this before, like with Necrons, it's really difficult 500 points to get that kind of Silvertide feel to it, given some of the point costs associated with the units. a 20 man Necron warrior unit ends up costing, I mean, it's they're what, 12 points a piece, so 240 points for a just a unit. So when you go into a patrol, it becomes, and reanimation protocols really benefits with the more models in the unit that there are. And so some of the army mechanics that are built into some of these, just a few of them, are really based on having more. And so I'm not saying that they're necessarily sincerely disadvantaged, but I do think something like Necrons are disadvantaged at the smaller point values for those units. Now, that's not to say that there aren't other options that you might go into at 500 points that are better. And that could be something that you'd suggest, but you're definitely, I just, for some of these, the context, I wouldn't recommend you go, you can't just cut down, okay, here's my army at 2000, I'm going to take the 500 point version of it. It just doesn't work in that same way.
It changes the point level, and the landscape of the game, I think, changes what's
absolutely
good. Aggressors. Yeah, absolutely. I saw a unit of aggressors on the table.
Yep.
And I thought, is a brilliant choice at this point level.
They're tough, right? And they've got the volume that you need for smaller units. They can definitely put it in.
There was a lot of discussion that I enjoyed. It's like, you know, that level of discussion that you hear at events. You know, people are talking about what's good, what they should have done differently. And a lot of this discussion was, well, at this point level, this is much better than it would be at the other point levels. And I think it's fair to say, but it's actually true that it may change what you take to fit in those slots when you're dealing with, you know, you can't get all the toys like Tanya was saying.
Yeah, for sure.
In when I first started playing fantasy, I used to hear echoes from the 40K guys saying that there was essentially a tournament season structured around building a new army every year. Like the season, like the year would start off with a couple of 500, 1,000 point events, one or two every quarter, and then it go to 1,250, then to 1,500, then to 1,850 with a couple of events at the end of the year. I think that is a phenomenally amazing way of enjoying the game. Just putting it out there.
Yeah.
And so I wholeheartedly support.
Slow grow leagues.
Exactly right. And I think it's an awesome thing to just do. Like, this is essentially the whole state of Victoria, which I lived in, would get in semi-involved. There was an event called the Norris 1000. Which is just Chuck Norris themed everything, like tournament. Like, you'd get points for having Chuck Norris themed miniatures. Like, I painted like a Texas Ranger cowboy hat and put it on my space, my like Templars Empress Champion. I'm like, you know, he's Walker for this one.
Why would you not?
Well, yeah, exactly. It was just really fun stuff. And then there was a big event that was a 1250 or a 1350 and so on and so on and so on. And it was really a cool way of just starting it every year fresh or building a past army differently. So yeah, the first couple of years doing that I did was building different versions of an Imperial Guard army. And just every year I'd try and build another wing into the Guard army. Like, first one was just the infantry. Then it was, you know, then it was a lot of the auxiliaries playing more Bulgrin and Psykers and stuff. And that was just a sweet way. And now I've got 10,500 points of painted Cadians because of events like those. Mm. So I wholeheartedly support more combat patrol, more whatever you want. Just, I think they're sick.
Yeah. I'm surprised I didn't see any like Redemptor Dreadnoughts at this event. I think they'd be murderous.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, man. For sure, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
But anyway, Marines have a lot. You know, they can compete, I think, at just about any level. But yeah, some of these other armies, like, I was struggling to, like, so, you know, obviously I ended up on Death Guard, but I thought, like, how many Plague Bearers can I get out of this thing? You know, there's ways to break any format. And that's also one of the cool little mental exercises is to figure out what the most effective thing is. And I think that's what got us along this trail of, like, okay, some of this stuff it may be difficult to deal with in one game, but the game really only takes about an hour. So, and we normally spend 4 hours, 3.5 hours, 4 hours playing a single game. What if we had all these games? You could come away from a weekend playing, I don't know, 25 games of 40K.
Yeah, it's a thing. I'd love that. Here's a, I don't want to sidetrack us, but have you guys had much discussion over there of the concept of sideboards in 40K?
It comes up. Oh.
Yeah, I love that. What was that? Perfection. Perfection. Because that encapsulates my thoughts on it. But this is the thing that comes up every, like, 6 months to a year. People are like, ah, we should really be playing with, you know, 1,500 point armies and a 500 point sideboard.
I tried to stifle that as much as I could.
No, don't stifle it, because that's my feelings as well. I'm like,
It was perfect.
What do I got to do? I got to write 3 or 4 lists now for submission and bring 3 or 4 copies of each one? Or do I get to, because I've got a massive collection of guard, do I get to win because I have enough cases to bring 10,000 points of guard to every game and just build the perfect 500-point counter to whatever your list is, and we just price each other out of having fun? But yeah, it's just a thing that popped into my head. I'm like, have we ever discussed it on here? And what do you guys think?
I actually played in a sort of narrative TTS tournament that had a sideboard, and nobody used their sideboard. Like some people didn't even build one. They were just like, oh. And then like in the final tables, it was a narrative final game for like first, second, and third place. And the TO, and it was a surprise what it was going to be. And then the TO was like, oh, you just get to put your sideboard in as well for this game. Oh, wow. So then the people were like, I didn't bring a sideboard. It was like, oh, well. But yeah, in general, nobody used their sideboard. I didn't use my sideboard.
Because it's tedious to completely redo an army. Because rarely do you have 500 plug-and-play points.
So that takes me to
Josiah.
Well,
I think
he
spit up in his mouth.
there's different aspects to this. And when you talk about, well, I have 1,500 points and then I have a 500-point sideboard that you, or you have 1,000 points in your sideboard and you can pick and choose to fill in that 500, I kind of start to like, I'll get an eye twitch over that for sure. But when we talk about, so they did it with War Machine, War Hordes, right? Where you could essentially have two different lists. And that game was, or has been at a point, more skirmish oriented, right? Like, I mean, I'd maybe have maybe no more than 15 models or so on average in my army. And you could have two lists. And you could say, okay, this, I'm going to use this list or this list. And I don't think that was necessarily, if you go into this, what we were just talking about with 500 points, if you had two different 500 point armies, like for the most part, you know, most people have approximately 1,000 points or so. And they could be different variations, and to a point with the comp suggestions that we talked about like last week, you could say, well, you can't share any of the same units in one, you know, in either of your two lists. So it's not as much of a sideboard concept as it is like, here's my combat patrol Alpha, here's my combat patrol Bravo, and going into any fight, like, okay, I know who I'm going to play. Before I go to the table, I have to select, you know, you can see their list, you can see their Alpha or their Bravo list, but the players have to submit before either of them knows which one they're going to bring, what list they're going to have. And then, you know, so you can kind of plan, you know, we were just talking about being faced with list building dilemmas, this ability to go up and say, well, I'm going to take a heavy list or heavy vehicle, anti-vehicle list, or a heavy infantry, anti-infantry list. Like, you could do something like that. So I think, Adam, I think there's something to that in certain comps, right? But I think in standardized play, especially given the models, the hobby, and everything else to it, you know, Tanya, you mentioned narrative. I could see that in a narrative deal too. You do have those options. There are, when you go into a given fight or something, you do have the ability to say, well, I need this tool to do this versus this, right? And so that is a thing. But when it comes to the competitive play, I really, the sideboard thing, you know, we were just talking about active judging to a certain degree and some of the other elements. I think we're better off without that little added piece of complexity to a certain extent.
I think it's too much.
I'll stop there.
No, I think it was one of the most frustrating times to play tournament level 40K was when demon summoning was so popular.
Oof, yeah, that's about the closest thing to a sideboard I can think of. Yeah,
and even, you know, and things have slowed it down, and you know, I know things can still be running with reserves, but it's just less fashionable, you know, to do so, and especially when the points have to be built into your list, and that's pre-building them into a certain thing, and I think that when you're at an event and time is a serious constraint, round time, a number of rounds per day, making your flight home, do you take the day before off for work? You know, all these things factor in. You don't need to add to that time of deciding 15, 30 minutes or more of how to change out your army.
Yeah, I agree. I think we have enough issues adjudicating the legality of a lot of lists without adding essentially two other lists. So the number of lists would just double. If it had 1,500 points and three sideboards, that's another 1,500 points of review we have to do for everything. So it's such a massive burden on something that's already, I wouldn't say unwieldy, but it's already just super complex. So yeah, I'm never been a fan, but
if this is right for your crew, you know, I mean, then run a tournament like that. I don't want to make it sound like I'm discouraging that. I think that there are a number of contributing factors that are limiting to that idea. But if you find a way to navigate those things and you think it'll be fun, then go for it.
I don't have many requests, but I would like to put I'll humbly beseech TPM to make that. What do you guys think of sideboards to be the cold open?
I think your recommendation for the cold open should be the cold open. I think my recommendation for your recommendation of the cold open should be the cold open. How's that sound?
I support your recommendation.
That'll be good.
Recommendations and feedback. Actually, one of the things that got from the last episode was what did we mean by comp? Comp scores or whatever. And that might be worth mentioning is that anytime that you put outside of the core rules or codex restrictions on how one might make an army list, then that's what we're talking about by comp.
Yeah. Yep.
And, you know, we kind of jumped back and forth between that and talking about these armies of renown that come with some forced restrictions, how we generally, at least, and look, I don't want to speak for everyone, but it sounded like we had a consensus that we were against, you know, arbitrary comp. But it seemed like we were more okay with codex or supplement driven comp.
Yeah, I love the different restrictions that GW are building into their codexes right now, e.g., you know, one captain, two lieutenants, stuff like that. I'm a really, really, really big fan of those little elements being added in just to make things seem a bit more adiphematic elements. And no matter what list you build, it feels like it should. It feels like it's supposed to be representative of what they are in the fluff, et cetera, et cetera. Because essentially that's the same as what the special rules are. Like your army special rules are essentially a form of comp as well. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, disgusting resilient. It's called disgusting resilient for a reason. It's not called fluffy fun times, you know, it's a special rule for Death Guard.
It felt pretty fun times for me when it worked. I'm telling you, it was standing sure there like a brick house. Like they could huff and puff, and they were not blowing Typhus over for that one round.
But yeah, nice. You see what I mean? Like there is a lot. The whole concept of comp is a lot broader than people just saying you can't take that. You're allowed to take that, but only one of those things, and you're allowed to take nine of these things on a Sunday. it's so much bigger than the context we give it. If you want to look at comp, like the whole game is comp. Anything that's attached apart from the rule book is a version of comp onto that game. I love the way GW's been doing it at the moment.
Yeah, but over the course of the eons here, we've had different ideas of what the comp should be, and should there be comp scores? Like there have been composition scores that would equate to your overall tournament performance or contribute to your overall tournament performance.
Sure.
And it's very subjective. And that's what I think that doesn't sit well with everyone and why we have generally moved away from it as a community.
I think that's a fair point.
Yeah, but, you know, again, I'm all about, you know, do whatever your group wants to do for fun. They're your models.
Absolutely.
Speaking of that, though, sorry to go back to the 500 point as being competitive. I like 500 point games for another reason. I think that with the hobby getting more and more expensive, I think that 500 point events allow people to test the waters a little bit and maybe get that sort of tournament bug that a lot of us have gotten over the years, because I think that there's a huge demographic of people who are going to be priced out of the hobby if they always have to have a 2,000 point army.
That's an excellent point, but I know that this one 500 point army leads to another 500 point army, but it's at least my choice, you know, right? It's
not yeah, but it at least gets them started, right? So they have something to do while they're collecting and painting that next 500 points.
I just think, you know, again, it just got us thinking because of the way the world is right now and what might be a way to ease back into being able to venture outside and play outside of our homes and outside of our bubbles, as it were.
I'm just selfish because I want to get more people to play with. So if 500 points is what gets more people into my hobby, I'm all for it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, fair enough. It was just a fun exercise. And I did have a really good time playing. It was, I felt like it scratched that itch. I was able to move around figures. I was completing objectives, but I did not do any testing for this event, so I don't know that I'd quite wrapped my head around the constraints of not having. I had no idea what secondaries to pick once I actually sat down and looked at the missions.
I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's some great exploration that, you know, it pushes you to do.
I found myself like taking psychic ritual.
Look at that.
Which I performed exactly twice over the course of 20 rounds of play or whatever.
How did you find you did like on average for like average points per secondary that you took?
I was doing
were
okay.
Were they fairly low or they were all right?
Yeah, I was okay. So like there was typically four objectives on the table and I was generally able to get spread the sickness on them. I was able to typically get into table quarters and I was typically not able to remember to do psychic ritual.
Nice.
But I was able to kind of, with Poxwalkers, it's not a throwaway unit, but you can really hunker down on an objective and control one. So I was able to do pretty well on primary, and I did okay on secondaries most of the time. You know, I won most of my games, but it was, I found myself really still having to think about what I wanted to do and make sure. And I also found myself, like, I'm used to playing on the 2000 point table space. So when I thought, oh, of course I'm in that table quarter, or of course I'm where I need to be, and then finding out, crap, I'm not actually where I need to be. Those were all kind of wake-up calls. You know, you got to really focus in on, it was a different play experience. Now, you only make that mistake once, and then sometimes once is all it takes to lose the game.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I really enjoyed the small points. I don't know. I always have, but... I want the small points to take off, darn it.
Well, I think you can get a full game experience. That was the thing, is that I felt at the end of those games, I still felt like I had a full game experience.
Mm-hmm.
Gonna throw this one out there, but I've just been sitting here musing on it. I realize what's happened to all my small game. My small game experience now is usually Horus Heresy played on a Zoom Mortalis table. That's my current small game experience. And it is incredible for those people who haven't played it.
Why do you say that?
It's just so much fun. It's corridor warfare. It's freaking amazing. Every model matters, every decision matters, and the thematic elements, because me and my mates have got a proper Zone Mortalis Forge World table. I'm not sure if they're making them anymore, but just the zone that table puts you in is second to none when playing a game like 40k or 30k. I'm assuming 30k would feel similar. You know, it might be a little bit more interesting. It'd just be so cool just to play like Gene Steel Occult versus, you know, Death Watch on like a Zone Mortalis table and just be like, hey, just reenact all your aliens goodness or your Space Hulk goodness. It would be amazing.
I'm digging it. Yeah, I think I'm going to be exploring these smaller point games as options to do. I mean, again, I am a big kill team proponent. I enjoy it, but it's a different game like we're talking about.
Yeah.
I don't think I expected to like it. So, but you're getting the Horus Heresy experience in the same way?
Yeah, it's scratching my itch, I realized. I've just been sitting here thinking about it. And yeah, definitely scratching that itch.
Well, nice, man. Well, it's been a fun chat. Thanks for indulging us on these topics. And I'm curious to see if what people are taking in response to the Drukhari being dominant. Are they even dominant in your area? Are you even getting games? Is this just, you know, almost like a phantom thing that you see people discussing on the internet? What are people's actual experience with it outside of a couple of these interactions? And then what do people think about the small game, small point format?
Yeah, chuck it up. I mean, I'm really keen to see how many people are really keen on this stuff. Is there a split? Like, do the same people who love playing Combat Patrol love playing Kill Team or Necromunda? Is there just like a whole small game, small table, you know, freak fest going off in the corner that I haven't heard about yet? And they're all just like, this is the way to play, Adam. You don't know. You haven't experienced it yet. You're missing out.
We're going
to
figure it out.
I can't be the only one.
Well, again, thanks everybody for tuning in. Tune in next week. We'll be back. Don't forget to hit the bell. I don't know. Do whatever. Click whatever has to click.
Hit all the buttons.
We'll see y'all.
Bye. Night.
Bye, everybody.
You can't handle the truth.